Welcome, everyone, to episode 430 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor. And for this episode, we have a very special interview with Tony from the band Condition Critical. They're my paisans. They're from New Jersey like I am. And you guys have to thank Ed Ferguson for turning me on to the band and making me want to do this interview.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
Quick reminder that in addition to hosting Signals from Mars, I've also worked behind the scenes helping other podcasters. With over 16 years of experience and more than 1,200 episodes that I've produced or appeared on, I offer podcasting editing, ghost hosting interviews, and repurposing content into viral clips, show notes, transcripts, and social media posts. If you've got a podcast and need help making it sound professional, or if you want to turn your episodes into content that actually grows your audience, I can help. Check out the podcasting services page over at signalsfrommars.com. Just go all the way to the right on the menu. You'll see work with me, hover over that, and you'll see podcast services and sponsorship. Let me help you make your podcast stand out. Speaking of sponsorships, Signals from Mars is sponsored by listeners like you and also by great sponsors. If you've got a brand, product, or service that connects with rock and metal fans, I'd love to work with you. Our audience isn't casual. They're collectors, concert goers, and gear buyers who support the bands and brands they love. Sponsorship packages start at just $150 a month and include on-air mentions, social media plugs, and even product features. If you want to connect with a loyal rock and metal audience, head on over to the sponsorship page on signalsfrommars.com to learn more. One of the most important aspects about bringing Ed in to help doing the album reviews, the monthly reviews that we do, bi-monthly sometimes, because we're going to be doing October and November together in a few weeks. But one of the reasons why I wanted to bring Ed in is because he's a huge fan of extreme metal and of different types of metal that perhaps Jeremy and myself are not as into. It is very important to me to keep metal going, to keep hard rock going, to keep people in the know of great new bands, great old bands that are putting out new music. And to me, it's very important to keep that torch going, you know, whatever other cliche you want to throw in there. And to our surprise, Ed has been really good at pointing things out from across the board and saying, hey, you know, this has this type of influence. You're going to like it, even though it's maybe a death metal band or a black metal band or thrash, which is something that the three of us tend to agree on. Ed has a long commute a lot of times, so he gets to listen to a lot of different things that perhaps Jeremy and I don't. For example, this Condition Critical album. And when he reviewed it a few episodes ago, he instantly said, this is the thrash album of the year. And he's actually backed that up. I've interviewed someone else today, actually, for an upcoming episode, and I mentioned the band to him. So I kind of returned the favor, and he says, wow, this is a great year for thrash. Anyone that kind of doesn't think that, you know, you're not taking the time out to actually check some of this great new music that's coming out. So do yourself a favor. Listen to the interview. Hopefully you enjoy me and Tony. talking back and forth, and hopefully it gets you to check the album out. Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. Joining me today is Tony from Condition Critical. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, man. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Awesome. So, first of all, you guys are from New Jersey?
That is okay. Well, we are technically from Jersey, so I live in Jersey. But our singer lives in Miami.
Okay.
Our bass player currently lives in Massachusetts, but two of the four members are in New Jersey. So yes.
Okay. Whereabouts in Jersey?
I live in North Bergen, and the drummer lives somewhere around like Sayreville area. But we're okay. Originally from, so the majority of the members were from like South Brunswick. So like New Brunswick.
Okay.
Area, so Central Jersey, but I've been in Jersey my whole life, you know? So
yeah.
You can't get me out of this, the state, man.
Yeah, the end of the intro video there has Doc Coyle of God Forbid, who's from East Brunswick.
Yep. I'm a huge fan of this, by the way.
Yeah, I'm wearing a Jersey Metal t-shirt. I'm originally from a town in North Central Jersey called Dover. Which is where Kirk Hammett played his first show with Metallica at a place called the Show Place. And it's funny because I've been living in Europe since the end of 2003, and I went back for the first time in like 14 years last year, and seeing that specific place, which was a recording studio and a go-go bar, is now some type of restaurant. So it was a trip to see. So again, anytime that I can support fellow people from Jersey, I'm more than happy to do so.
Oh, we appreciate you, man.
That's yeah. Awesome.
I love that. And Dover's an interesting area. I feel like it's changed a lot. So I could see why that, you know, venue is no longer there and it's a restaurant, because, you know, it just kind of seems to be the direction which they're going. Like there's a lot of like new, like things being built up, like in that like part of Jersey, something that I've noticed.
Yeah. Absolutely. So for you today, is it technically Mischief Night?
I guess so. Yeah. The hair's down, dude. I'm going to be punching walls. Who knows what I'm going to do?
So for people that are outside of the area, it was always interesting debate when I went to college, where people were like, no, this is called Devil's Night where I'm from. Like, no, man, North Jersey, this has always been Mischief Night, the day before Halloween. So you were good for finding toilet paper in trees. You were good for finding cars that were soaped up and eggs, all types of different shit.
So in South Jersey, we used to call it a Mischief Night as well. So yeah, okay. I'm with you there.
Okay. There you go. How much does being from Jersey play into what you guys do as a band?
Man, I think it's a big part of it. I mean, listen, we live in an industrial state. Like it's like there's a certain vibe that comes out of here, you know? And, you know, right next door is New York and there's New York hardcore, right? And so with our music, it's obviously thrash metal, right? But we got some hardcore element in it too. And, you know, believe it or not, like our singer, while he is from Miami, he's really into like New York and New Jersey hardcore. So like he brings that element in his vocals. And certainly, and you know, some of the riffs that me and Mike Dreyer, the bass player, write, it's kind of stems from that. You know, I'm a big fan of Anthrax and I love their vibe, you know, and I think that comes from like kind of being from this area, you know, it's just, it's so constraining. There's so many people. It's like, you know, sometimes it can just feel a little bit, like claustrophobic, right? Mm-hmm. And it brings out that like inner rage, you know, so to speak. And, you know, it comes out in the riffs and it comes out in the vocals, you know, on Ryan's behalf.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a great point, because there's definitely a vibe or an attitude of being from that general area. You feel it with a lot of the bands. It's funny because as we've been talking about your band on my Patreon and just with different people on social media and stuff, a lot of things have been coming up with, oh, well, they sound like this band or they sound like that band. And I'm like, man, listen to the bass. It sounds like Overkill to me. There's a definite like Didi Verney type influence. Oh, yeah. The bass really sticks out and stuff. And I'm like, that's definitely a homegrown sound that people from the area are proud of.
Oh yeah. 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 That's so Mike, like that was he's such a stickler for it, man. And let me tell you, so we worked with a guy by the name of Mike Lowe, who mastered the album, right?
Okay.
He played with a tech death band called Inferi, right, for years. And so like he has never like, I mean, maybe he has before like mixed a couple of thrash bands, but that's not what he's known for. He's known for tech death and like that kind of stuff. Symphonic death metal, black metal, whatever.
Right.
So, you know, I'm good buddies with him and I tasked him with this. I was like, dude, we need you to make this bass pop. Like, and Mike is so specific about his tone. Like you were just mentioning how important that is, right?
Yeah.
You recognize it. You want to hear that. It's almost like a piano note, like smashing it, brown, 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 kind of, right? And so I remember getting the first mix and being like, oh, this is fine, right? But Mike was like, no, absolutely not. So he was a pain in the ass, but in the best way possible, because right. I can tell you the way that it came out is to perfection. But if it wasn't for him to keep like pushing it and pushing it, because for me, it was just like, I'm a guitar player, man. So I'm like, yeah, it all sounds good. Bass is fine.
Yeah.
But it was him really being a stickler for that specific type of tone that got it to where it was. And I'm so glad he did, because you're right. It does have that kind of like Overkill sound. And you know, when the bass needs to be prominent, it's up in the mix. And then when it, you know, the riffs are really fast, the bass is a little bit lower because otherwise it muddies the mix. So Mike Lowe did a really good job, you know, kind of with the levels and making sure that it pops when it needs to. And then also is within the mix when it has to as well.
Yeah. Okay. And you actually worked engineering the guitar and the bass on the new album, Degradation Chamber. Or did I say that right?
Degeneration Chamber. Yeah.
What was it like for you to work on that side of the recording of the album?
So I'm a little tinkerer, right? I've been doing that stuff for years. Like I have like my own like projects and stuff, like Chaos X or whatever, like that I'm always like, I'm always the one recording them and perhaps not always mixing them. Sometimes I've mixed and mastered my own stuff. Just, you know, it depends. I do my own like solo instrumental stuff, yada, yada. But you know, that side of it has always fascinated me. I enjoy the production side of things. I love doing it. I also, you know, there's part of me that maybe, I mean, this sounds like a perfectionist attitude, but it's almost kind of like, man, I got to do it. I want to do it. I want to have my hands on it. You know, I want to make sure the riffs sound the way like that I wrote them. Right. And, you know, part of that is like being the guy that's like, no, dude, you got to do that again. You know, and even to myself, man, I'll play something like 7 or 8 or 9 times over and over and over again. I'm like, not good enough. Delete. You know, it's like, it's part of that. It's, I like having a little bit of like that creative say into it, because when you're recording with an engineer, it's like, you know, sometimes they give creative input, sometimes they don't. But when you're recording with me, it's like, I can have that creative input with the other guitar player or with the bass player. And then in addition, there's times where it's like, you know what? Let's change that riff by one note, because we're just in the process of doing it. But you know what? Musically, this would make more sense and this would sound better and this would resonate better with the crowd, right? And so that kind of stuff doesn't necessarily happen in the studio if you're not the one engineering it, right? You're kind of just coming in with your riffs and you're all nervous and you're just like, all right, let's just play it, right? Versus this, it's comfortable. It's in my own little environment. I got my little home studio set up, you know, and, right. You know, and we just kind of get to it.
Yeah, that's cool. And it's funny because not every band can do that. Like you see or you hear a lot of bands that produce their own stuff and they're not good at cutting themselves off, you know, whether it's just the mix isn't right, or maybe there's a guitar sound that isn't right, or maybe there's a riff that you hear and you're like, wow, you know, given their legacy, I'm surprised they're putting that on an album. So it's not always easy to be critical of yourself.
I know what you mean, man. And so this was the most important thing for me too, in this production process. And this is why I really liked being a part of it. Was I didn't want like a very, and it's tight. We were tight players, but I didn't want something like inorganically tight. Does that make sense? I wanted real performances, right? As much as possible. And so I feel like sometimes with like the modern engineer, and I'm not downplaying it, this is necessary in certain types of music, like technical death metal in general, like it's gotta be pinpoint accurate. But I think sometimes with like thrash, it's like those naturally, organically type players. It comes across and resonates a little bit better. You know what I mean? Like you can almost get a live feel from it. And that's really what I wanted. I wanted the performances to kind of have that tonality to it. And I feel like, again, sometimes in the studio, man, you're rushing. You got to move quick. Maybe the engineer's moving too fast. They're editing, chopping, clipping it all away, right? Versus just allowing the performance to breathe. Hell, if you got to do it 10 times, you're doing it 10 times. Like that's the way to be. You know? Get a tight guitar track on your own. And then if you got to like, you know, clean some stuff in between here and there, that's okay. But to me, it's like to give that organic sound. It was so important to me. And, you know, that's another reason why I wanted to kind of have my hand in it as well. And yeah, it worked out. I think it worked out, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's important too, with a lot of metal that's become homogenized with just kind of being samey and too perfect. Like the essence of thrash was so not that. It was energy and there was stuff that was being messed up, and you know, it was more of a vibe and an attitude, what we talked about before, more than perfection. Yeah. You know, so I think it's important to keep that and get it across in the music as well.
Absolutely. And you know, you have to think back to this as well. It's like, you know, you have like Metallica, it's,
let's see, we just had some technical difficulties here, so we're picking things back up. The way that the album was put together, it sounds like it could have come out in the mid to late 80s. At the same time, it sounds fresh to today's scene. Was that something that you guys purposely did, or is that just a happy byproduct of just putting the material together?
Well, first of all, thank you, because that's awesome to hear that. Like, that's certainly, you know, what we were going for. We wanted to have like an old school sound, but with like a modern presence for sure. When we're writing riffs, we're not like, oh, I'm trying to sound 80s today, right? We're just writing riffs that like resonate with us and like we feel are just, you know, bring a certain energy, right? And so, you know, I think once the songs were tied and done together, like that's when we decided, hey, listen, this is kind of the edge that we have. It's sounding kind of old school, but the sound that we want from the mix and the mastering perspective is where we wanted to kind of like modernize it, right? And so to speak, okay. Like we wanted to have like a fresh sound to it where it's clear, the guitars, right? And the drums, you know, have a nice boom to them, and the bass is in the mix. And the solos are modern, right? Like kind of like modern Strat style. So like all that was definitely like factored in. But again, you know, when we're writing riffs, man, we're not thinking like, hey, I'm trying to sound like, you know, 1985. It's just kind of comes out, you know, but not all the riffs. I feel like, you know, there's certainly some like modern, like power trip kind of style, like, you know, slow breakdown sections, of course. But I think it's like a good mix of different kind of things going on there, you know?
Even still, you're bringing up Power Trip, but even they're heavily influenced with or from hardcore music as well. So yeah. I think that definitely lends to what you guys are doing also.
Yeah, yeah. You know, this is what I was always saying. I said, like, we were trying to make the slow parts slower, the faster parts faster, and the technical parts even more difficult to play. Like, that was kind of where we're at. And I always write, like those kind of like riffs where it's just like finger, just like all over the place kind of stuff. Like the cryonic intestinal preservation chorus riff, for example, it's like, you know, just really just, I don't know. You get like tongue tied, like playing it like, right. And it's like, those were the kind of riffs that I wanted to kind of like elevate. It's like, you know, on Extermination Plan, which I was a part of the writing process, 'cause I wasn't with the band for the first album. It was like, I kind of came in with like those like techie kind of riffs, right? Kind of switching it up. And then with this album again, I just wanted to kind of, again, elevate that experience and make them even more annoying to play live. Like that's my goal, right? How can I make this as difficult as possible just for no reason, you know? And it's fun, you know, all the triplets and stuff. We even like, I don't know, it's crazy. Like you have to like warm up seriously before you play these tracks. Otherwise you're cramping.
Gotcha. Okay. And you just mentioned you weren't an original member of the band. How did you end up joining the band?
Yes. So I've been in the metal world for quite some time. I've been playing in bands since I was like 14 years old. I'm 34 now.
Okay.
So it's been a long time. And, you know, it was around 2009, 2010, 2011-ish. where I was like playing shows in a band called Legionary. It's a death metal band. They're still kind of around now, but I just do like guitar solos for them. And then it's just like a studio project, right? He just does it for fun. And back then we were playing a lot of live shows, but there was one point where we played with the guys from Condition Critical, but they were in a different band at the time called Strychnia. And so I kind of met them in that way. And they, so they knew who I was. They knew I was like the little shredder kid with long hair, because I had long hair at the time as well. And, you know, when it came time to them, you know, looking for a lead guitar player, they're like, what about that guy? Right. And it just kind of worked out. And it's been awesome because, you know, me and Mike Dreyer have become best friends, you know, and I'm really good friends with Ryan Donato, the drummer as well. And of course, Ryan Taylor, love him as well. But those two guys were the guys that I met back then. So we can think about 2009, 2010, right? So I've known those guys for better half of 15 years. And so it's just wonderful to still be in a band with them for so long and so consistently. And to be able to release several albums together has been tremendous, you know? So it's a small world often, and you never know who you're going to end up being in a band with, so to speak.
Right.
And the band that ends up being successful and you're with these guys. Perhaps at that time, I would never have thought, right, that I would be doing this.
Right. Okay. And Degeneration Chamber took 9 years to come out. Yes. Is there any specific reason why it took so long?
Yeah, of course. So I wrote a lot of the songs back in like 2016, 2017, 2018 or so. And there was a point where we kind of like, we parted ways with our singer, Ryan, and we got a new guy in like 2020, and then COVID happened. And things just kept kind of like getting pushed off and pushed off, right? And so during that time in between like 2016 and 2019, we're doing a lot of playing out, right? We were doing a lot of touring. We were really promoting the album. And I had those songs in the back burner just like kind of like waiting to roll. And again, when 2020 hit, it seemed like everybody kind of like paused on the brakes. And, you know, you start focusing on your career. You start focusing on other elements in life. And, you know, the band ends up taking a back seat. Now, while those songs are still there, you know, they're sitting on the back burner, mm-hmm. you know, we're kind of not really doing much. And I think the motivation, you know, in 2021, 2022, just wasn't there, right? Like, I think collectively.
Okay.
And, you know, there was a certain point where I was like, yo, we got to start doing this thing. We got these awesome songs written. We got to mm-hmm. get to it, right? And so we ended up kind of like slowly getting back into the groove. And finished like writing like, I think it was like two or three more songs to make sure that it would be nine. And we got in the groove when we brought back our, you know, old singer Ryan into the band. One of the things is for us is we wanted to have two albums in a row with the same, you know, vocal intensity, vocal style. We had this guy, Michael Chavez, is a great dude from out in the Bay Area. He plays in a band called Hemotoxin, Ripped to Shreds, if you're familiar with them. So okay. Great dude, he's doing a great thing out there. Like, he's awesome. Love the guy. He's a great guitar player too. It would have been awesome to kind of do dueling shred solos with him, right? But, you know, trying to fly him out from California was insane. Like, it was just a logistical nightmare, right?
Right.
And part of that consistency of having somebody from album two on album three again also was like something to kind of think about. You know, we wanted consistency. Because here's the thing. I think this is such an important thing. When you remove a variable, how do you measure it from what was done previously? Right?
Okay, right.
So we wrote these songs and we're thinking, okay, these are the best songs we've ever written. But if it's not consistent to what was brought before, like, how are people going to know that it's better? Right? Because potentially they look at the vocals immediately and they just turn it off. I hate it. Right? Who knows? Because sometimes people are like that. I know I'm guilty of this sometimes. New vocalist, put it on, ew. And I didn't even give it a chance. Right?
Right.
So that was my biggest concern. And okay. So when we brought back Ryan, it was kind of like that idea of like, we're going to keep that consistency and we're going to see how this plays out. We think these songs are better. We'll see what, you know, the people think. And hopefully, you know, from what I've seen, it seems like the response has been great. So.
Okay. Yeah. Was it difficult to get Ryan back into the project? I mean, is 9 years is a long time. So I'm assuming, you know, everyone is grown, maybe things that separated you guys at one point seemed trivial, and maybe, I don't know, the band was more important than the initial issues. I don't know.
So we're brothers at the end of the day, right? Okay. And brothers can squabble, and sometimes brothers might not talk to each other for years, right? And that happens in life with your own family, your own flesh and blood. And again, these are my brothers. And so I think there's a point, man, you get a little bit older, you think to yourself, like, there's not a lot of time on this earth. Mm. And there's no reason to hold any grudges for whatever it is, right? And so I believe if somebody is sorry for, like, let's say if they did something wrong and they're apologizing for it, man, you all right, man, that's good. You know, this is great. Like come back into the fold. Like, it doesn't have to be like a contentious thing where you got a, you know, hatred for somebody for the rest of your life. That makes no sense, especially somebody that you spent days and days and days in a van with each other. And you're so close. You're laughing about the same thing. You're doing all this, you know, one incident or whatever it is shouldn't separate you. And I'm a big believer in that. And again, the older I get, the more I start realizing and recognizing this. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, this is also a business and we wanted to keep it consistent, but also this is a friendship, a brotherhood. We wanted that guy back as well. Right. So it, I'm glad it worked out. You know, we had a good lengthy discussion when we were down there for a wedding. Me, Mike Dreyer, were down for one of our buddies was getting married, you know, somewhere in like the Fort Lauderdale area. And Brian lives in Miami. So, you know, I think we spent like 3 or 4 hours hashing it out, you know. And it's like, it's one of those things where, you know, it takes like a case of beer, you know, and you're just kind of
right
in the heat of the moment. You just go through it. And once you go through it, you're like, that's it. All right. Time to move on.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Yeah. Glad you guys were able to work it out. And I mean, what you're saying makes sense. I mean, you want consistency with the band. You want something that people are familiar with. And it's awesome that you guys were able to work everything out.
Yeah. No, I agree, man. It really is.
Yeah. Tell me a little bit about your gear. I see a Les Paul behind you. I see a Marshall behind you.
Yes, yes. Okay, so hold on, I'm pointing the wrong way. That Les Paul is the one that I used to record the album.
Okay.
And you can see there's also the artwork, the original artwork that Andrei Buzikov painted back there as well. You know, there's the vinyl on the shelf. And so for me, it means a lot. Like that Les Paul, it signifies something to me, right? And it's the fact is that's the beast that recorded this album. And I wanted it out, you know, on display. You know, for me, it's it was instrumental in creating the album. You know, it gives it that chunky tone that I really was looking for. Because hell, listen, on stage, I'm using a Jackson and it sounds great. But there's something about these Les Pauls that just produce a really crunchy, thick tone that I really wanted for the album. And so that's why I have it out there on display, you know. And that Marshall cab is the one that I use live, right? And the amp on top of it is, hold on, let me try to move out of the way, is the JSX.
Okay.
And that is actually the amp that we used to reamp all the guitars for Extermination Plan, so for our second album.
Okay.
And, you know, all of it, I'm like one of those sentimental guys, you know, it all means something to me. You know, somebody who comes over my house is just like, oh, what's all that crap? But there's a meaning behind it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And it matters to me, but yeah. So in terms of gear, like, again, I use a Jackson Live. It's actually got 27 frets of pure madness. And by the way, I use the 27th fret on the album. You got to go all the way up. What's the point of having it if you're not going to use it, you know? Right. And, in terms of live tone now, I actually use a Kemper. And something I found is the consistency of it is just gorgeous, man. Like, I don't have to worry about getting these tubes changed and this and that. And listen, sometimes beer gets spilled on that thing. I don't know how many times beer has gotten spilled on that JSX, but it's more than I can count on two hands. And I'm not even kidding. So I don't have to deal with that anymore. It's, you know, I got just a digital amp with a consistent tone. And I basically model it directly off of what we did on the album, which is a PV6534 plus, I believe is what it is. And I mean, to me, it sounds really good and replicates what we did in the studio. And I think that's so imperative, you know, if you're trying to come to, you know, different audiences and bring that same like anger, that same sound, it's good to have that consistent tone, you know?
Yeah. Cool. What influences that you have that may surprise people? So what, like, out of left field, if you say, oh, well, I learned this from this person or that person, might catch some people off guard.
I mean, it's not that it's going to catch people off guard because people know me as like a solo guitar player, but you know, you can think of like the Paul Gilberts, Steve Vai, you know, Joe Satriani. like, you know, Joe Satriani is very melodic. So maybe that's like shocking to people, like, oh, he likes melodic music. Weird, you know?
Right.
But I even listen to a lot of the modern guys. So Animals as Leaders, I love the strange time signatures, like all that kind of playing. I got an 8-string guitar and I kind of write some stuff like that as well. So I'm a big fan of like modern instrumental solo music, solo guitar music rather. Intervals, Pliny, you know, I don't think people realize that I'm listening to that guy kind of stuff too, you know?
Okay.
And I'm actually a fan, and believe it or not, like of like old school, like pop punk even. So like, even like a Blink 182. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's their melodies are so like, it's like almost like, I'm not going to call it corny, but it's like so like happy and so major mostly, like a lot of it. And so like, for me, it's a good way to like listen through and like come up with ideas for melodies. Mm-hmm. Right? When it comes to solo guitar playing, like, you know, a lot of that stuff, it applies. Like, you're not going to just shred all over the place because that's going to bore people. You mm-hmm. want to create like a story, and you want to create something with melodic tension, and listen to stuff like that. Like, it's even, I know it's so simple, but you know, it has a lot of that. Even like Green Day, like old school Green mm-hmm. Day, has that kind of stuff as well. And so you take that and you apply it to guitar, and you think to yourself, okay, how can I apply that sort of melody and try to like put it in the thrash metal? And now necessarily it's not always happening, right? But right. you know, you find a way to kind of like incorporate a little bit of melody to create a story as you're soloing. Because for me, I don't want people to be like, dude, this, what is this? Like, just like none of it makes sense. Or like Carrie King, you know? The goal is to kind of like craft like a nice story, nice melodic piece that, you know, kind of goes and ebbs and flows from like, you know, some speed stuff, some melodic stuff, and then, you know, maybe some not so melodic stuff, right? So that's kind of where I'm at.
Okay. Could you see yourself recording an instrumental guitar album at some point in the future?
I'm so glad you asked that. I already recorded one. It's already mixed and mastered.
Okay.
Ready to go. I just am waiting for, I'm on a Condition Critical to get its love, because Condition Critical deserves its love. You know, okay. I put so much work into this. This has been 9 years in the making. That solo stuff, the majority of it I wrote in like, you know, 2023 onwards, right? So it's relatively all new stuff, but very melodic. The opposite of this, there's no metal really. There's like perhaps just a few metal sections where there's like some chugs here and there. But it's very melodic and probably not what people are going to be anticipating, is what I'll say. But I can't wait to you know, unleash that. But I'll definitely start like, you know, throwing out some more teasers and stuff. Every once in a while, like my Instagram story, I'll put like a video of me like playing something, and somebody's like, "What is that?" You know, so it's just like a random like jazz fusion section on like my solo album or something. Right. You know? So to come, it's to come soon.
Okay. Sure.
Thanks for asking though.
Yeah. That's cool. The other thing that I noticed on your Facebook, you guys posted a picture of Ace Frehley, who just recently passed away.
Yeah.
What's your favorite Ace Frehley moment? Do you have a favorite album or song or anything like that you could share?
Shock me. That's, I know that's what everyone says, you know, but that's dude, as a kid, like as a young kid in his teens, like that was the dude for me, right? And so I used to look up, like, I remember scouring the internet for clips of him, you know, of course, like Eddie Van Halen, guys like that. Mm-hmm. Ace Frehley is like to me, he was a legend, because as a, you know, 9-10 year old, like you start with Kiss. Mm-hmm. And as I was getting my teenage years, when I started playing guitar, it's like, I want to be like that guy. Dude, I thought he was the coolest freaking dude on the planet. And of course, I'm bummed that he passed away. And I don't know, man. You just, it makes you remember like those things. When it sucks because he had to pass away for me to get those memories back, right?
Right.
And you don't think about that stuff daily because you're moving on. You got other things going on in your life. And then you see that and you're like, holy shit, that was my dude.
Yeah. You know?
That's a guy that I really, truly was inspired by and looked up to, and was one of the reasons why I play guitar the way that I do, you know? So, you know, rest in peace, Ace Frehley, man.
Cool. And if people want to check out Degeneration Chamber, I got it right this time. where can they go to pick the album up and get the most amount of money into your pockets, into the band's pockets?
Okay, so we have a merch website with set up with Indie Merch. You can also buy the tracks off of Bandcamp.
Okay.
And honestly, man, streaming services are free. You stream the album. I don't care. Just listen to it, right? I don't even care if you're, I mean, it's great if you pay for the album. We really appreciate it. But at the same time, I'd rather you listen to it. If it's the difference of paying $10 and not listening to it, I'd rather you just listen to it.
Okay. Right?
So check it out. You know, it's on Spotify. It's also, you can find it on Apple Music and all those other streaming platforms as well. And yeah, man, I'm just excited about this thing. Cause we, again, it took 9 years. You were just eloquently stating that earlier.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where I just want as many people who can't hear it to hear it.
Cool. Yeah. And so they should, like I said, before we started the interview with our September albums review, Ed Ferguson highly touted the album and said, in his opinion, it's the thrash album of the year.
That's awesome to hear that, you know, and when we were making it, it's not like we're thinking like, can't wait to get, you know, lauded with the album of the year, right? It's, you're just trying to create awesome music and an awesome experience for the listener and something where it's like, hey, this will translate to fun live. Mm-hmm. Like I said, thinking that you're going to die and that your forearms are going to freeze is awesome live. You're like, oh my God, what is going on? Right. Like, who doesn't want to do that? Right. And so that's why we do this, man, because we love to play music. We love to play this stuff live. We want people to hear it. We're not thinking about album of the year, but to hear stuff like that and the positive, you know, reviews, the 8, the 9s, the whatever out of 10s, like this has been awesome, dude. It's like exactly what you look for. And I'll tell you what, it's motivation to write the next album. I already started writing songs. I'm personally 2 songs in. And I'm sure the other guys are going to start, you know, kind of doing their thing as well. And definitely excited for what's to come. You know, we're going to keep trucking along. I'm not saying it's coming anytime soon. I'm just saying,
right,
starting to work on it because, you know, you get this kind of positive feedback and album of the year and this is so awesome and this and that. Like, it's wonderful and it gets you just like jazzed up, man. It's like, all right, on to the next one, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Where can people go to keep up with you guys online?
So we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook. We also have a YouTube page where, you know, we'll have the, you know, certain like things being posted on there every once in a while, like our music videos are on there. And then you can also follow us all on like Instagram as well. So like I have a personal Instagram, the bass player does as well, Mike Dreher, Ryan Donato also does. And so does Ryan Taylor. So you can find us all on the internet. If you want to find us, we're on there and we're friendly too. So if you shoot me a message, I'll answer. There's actually, you know, this one awesome, this young kid, dude, he's like, hey man, I'm trying to figure out how to play the solo to Post-Mortal Simulation. And I'm like, I got you. So like, I just real quickly like recorded like a video and kind of just like explaining it. Right. Because it's like, yeah, they're like diminished seventh chords and this and that. And so I do like a little weird, like sliding technique and it's something that maybe he hadn't like come across before. So I was like, say, do it. But if somebody wants to try to like figure out how to play a riff or something or ask me how to play a solo, like I am more than willing. You can reach out to me on my Instagram at Tony Barham as well too. So I love like educating stuff on like music. Like that's my shtick, man. Like my life. That's my passion. I love to do this thing. And you know, when people ask me questions like that, I'm like, I got you.
Awesome. Well, I'm sure that more than one of my followers will be hitting you up with stuff like that. So
I'd love to. But the answer awesome. All of
it. Awesome. Tony, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah. I appreciate you coming on and wish nothing but luck to you and the band. So,
thank you so much, man. Yeah, enjoy the rest of your day.
Awesome. On that note, we end the interview with Tony. Check out Condition Critical, and we will see you next time right here on Signals from Mars. See you, folks.
Thank you for listening to the Signals from Mars podcast. You can subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.